Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Friday, February. Oh, fuck. I already fucked up. It is Friday, March 1st, and you are listening. Oh, 2019. And you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 223. That's 223. Coming to you from the bunker underneath the ground.
From the bunker.
Across two locations, actually. None of that made sense. I am your host.
This is not the old bunker. This is a new bunker.
This is a new bunker. So
the G4.
We're in
Tech TV.
Yes, exactly.
You used to write for them.
I am your host, Natalie Watson, and I'm joined by the lovely Danielle Riando.
I'm lovely.
You are. You
Thank
sure are.
You. That's so nice of you.
I've got the what should I call you, Rob? The fool. Rob Zachney in front of me.
Shots have been fired, sir.
At least I know that this is properly episode 5.56.
What?
What?
Sorry, that was episode 223. That's the caliber run. Look, I play too much PUBG. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Wow.
That was a little NATO measurements, European measurements versus like American measurements thing. Don't worry about it.
Great.
Thanks. Kato is on the boards and also on mic with us
Hi.
Today.
Hooray.
You can hear me today. Hello.
Thanks for joining us. Rob, I have something to talk to you about that you tried to make me feel like a fool for, and now I get to make you feel like a fool. I have a tweet to read. It comes from @JesterPC, and they say, I'm sure this has been tweeted at you by now, but I didn't see it after a cursory glance. Sailboats 100% have motors that you absolutely need to gas up to navigate marinas and if the wind dies. That fact being true made the whole thing funnier. Rob, what do you have to say for yourself about the fact that you, sir, humiliated me on national podcasting for saying that I'm going to gas up my sailboat? Please. I would like to hear your thoughts.
Well, I think in the unedited audio file that Kato had access to, I also referred to the fact that there was a transitional point in sailing history where tall ships also had steam engines. So I'm familiar with the dual locomotion propulsion systems that sailboats tend to use. But I also think that if you consider yourself a sailor and you need a motor to navigate a marina, are you much of a sailor?
Wow.
Oh, shit.
Deferring in the shade to an sailors unknown... everywhere.
Wow. To a third party. Okay. I'll take it because it's not on me. So that's fine with me. We have games to talk about today, not boats. We're not going to talk about boats because I'm never allowed to talk about boats again, I decided. And the Just game so. That we're going to start with is Metro. Rob.
Weird, that has a boat.
Does it?
And a train.
I thought a metro was
you
a train.
You mean a ship.
Isn't a boat a train?
A boat is a train, yes. A boat is a train over water. I believe that with my whole heart.
So does Link.
Who's Link?
From Zelda.
Excuse me?
Is
Link
he a
from
boat?
The Zelda game. He went from having a boat in Wind Waker to having a train in Spirit Tracks.
Oh, is that why it's called Tracks?
Yes. Correct. That's correct.
That's really good titling right there.
Yeah, it's really intuitive design.
Makes sense.
Wind Waking Spiritual Tracks.
I get it now. Okay. What's up with Metro, Rob? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it Metro? I wish I didn't do that.
Wow.
Instant regret.
Wow, that's my subhead, I think, for review. No, this feels like a game I should really like, and yet everything about it just feels slightly off. I don't find myself agreeing with a lot of its perspective, but also just the way the game is designed.
Yeah.
So there's two fronts on which it is really struggling. So to give you an idea, Patrick and I talked about how disappointing the opening of this game was, but then there is a point where you're in the open world and things sort of, the game becomes much less linear and you sort of begin playing something more open world, something that is more like a Far Cry, for instance. And it's more interesting than a Far Cry. It's a little cruder feeling. You feel a little more vulnerable. It feels less like a pure power fantasy. But the more I play it, the less interesting that open world feels to me. Like, it still feels like a really pale imitation of what GSC Game World did with Stalker, like, over a decade ago at this point. And I think the big thing is that open worlds can feel just like a lot of empty space populated with enemies and monsters. And the way you can sort of imbue that with life is like give the impression that stuff, interesting stuff is happening in that world. And some games do this better than others. But where I've tended to really fall off of Far Cry, for instance, is that everything feels like it has a really narrow range, right? Like if you find a certain type of animal, it's like they all exist in a small pod that's, you know, just like maybe a football field or two wide, really. And that's kind of their ranging area. If you find enemies, they kind of tend to hang out in the same space and they don't really do anything interesting beyond that. They sit there and wait for you to interact with them. Metro Exodus tries to feel like there's this whole robust and like menacing mutant ecosystem out there. But once you realize that pretty much everything is just going to hang loose in the distance and not move, you realize that, like, it's a really big diorama. And you don't really have to, like, worry too much about navigating it because literally everything can just be circumvented. And it's really, like, once you sort of have that realization, the game gets really disappointing, right? Because then it starts to feel like the game just is this, the whole world is full of all these tripwires and places where you're just going to get bogged down. But there's never that moment that you have in ages ago that you had in Stalker where you start to realize like there are things that are following their own programming and priorities that you have to learn to watch for. Like you have to learn for signs that like, oh, this animal is in the area. This monster is in the area. And it's going to mess me up if I don't watch my back. This implies that you live in a world like that, but not really. Actually. You can always just back off and walk around.
So does it feel like they were more aiming to make a Far Cry-esque in the Metro universe, or were they? Is there enough there that you think maybe they were looking at Stalker as a touchstone?
I mean, this team has a common ancestor with Stalker, right? Like this studio is descent like is a breakaway from the studio that made Stalker. So that is 100% at least an aesthetic inspiration. It is a tonal inspiration. But I am not, it does feel to me like in a weird, this is the weirdest thing. It's like people who were involved in making Stalker, which remains one of the all-time greatest like semi-open world shooters ever made, didn't use Stalker as their model. It's like all that kind of just left their head and they saw a Far Cry game. And like, they were like, holy shit, do you believe games like this exist? What if we made that for Metro? And so it's this weird, like, it's such a weird thing. It feels like the original referent, which was Stalker. Metro was specific, the entire series was specifically about, well, Stalker kind of failed as a narrative game. It failed as creating sort of authored shooter moments. Metro is going to give you that in spades. Great. And then here we are in the third game. They're like, damn, Metro's so linear. What we need is an open world. If only there were an open world game like Metro that we could look to.
Oh, my God.
Far Cry 4 seemed popular. what if we did that? That's how it feels.
That's so weird.
Does it feel like it was an expectation of them? Like, it was like to do an open world is to like progress sort of in whatever like the game franchise's development like formula almost is supposed to be. Like, it was like, we, now that we're in the third game, like, you know, I guess we have to open up because that is like some sort of like an industry expectation or something like that. Does it feel like sort of transplanted almost?
So that's a weird, it's a weird thing, and it's an interesting question because I think there's a couple things. Mm-hmm. One is, it definitely feels like there's an element of, I don't know, of commerce, of filthy commerce involved in this, right? Where it's like,
does it ever feel like the game is trying to push back against that? Like, it was something that maybe the core of the game was like not meant to fill, and for that reason there's like tension or things like that. Yes. Or does it
because there are places where you'll go to you'll be in the open world, and then there'll be like a mission area. And there are places where, like, pretty clearly you've been pulled into what feels like it might as well be a separate instance, like separate from the game world. And at that point, you're back to playing an old Metro game in a lot of ways when you're in these sequences. You are in something now that all that open world stuff has dropped away. You're kind of back in decaying tunnels and heavy industrial structures. So it very much feels like there's kind of the old Metro identity living in places in this game. And you just have to traverse the open world to these locations where you get back to the same Metro you've always known. Mm-hmm. I think there is an element of, I don't know that necessarily they came to this saying, well, it's about time in this franchise life to begin making our open world shooter edition of this. I think the other part of this is they wanted to tell a version of what is one of the like capstone stories for the Metro novels, which is what happens when the main character Artyom leaves the Metro.
And what happens when they're based on novels.
Yeah. And this is the interesting thing. All the games have like diverged pretty significantly from the novels in some key ways. Mm-hmm. And in general, the endings the games have chosen to be canonical are more optimistic than the more tragic endings of the books, at least as far as the summaries I've read. And so now they're trying to Metro Exodus appears to be a version of a book that in the synopses I've read is deeply cynical and dark. Mm-hmm. But the way you're approaching that world in this game is from a position of the people who betrayed Artyom and let him down in the books are still his friends. Like, there's very much a Artyom and friends like journeying the world and Metro thing happening.
Yeah.
But then they're trying to make it so that you have this like almost, it's typical post-apocalyptic stuff, right? There's monsters. The worst monsters that populate the wasteland are people. Mm-hmm. And they're the monsters you expect them to be. That's the other thing is that there are places in this game where the beats are so rote and predictable that it's just incredibly disappointing to see, right? Yeah. Like, there's a major point in this game where you think you're going to get somewhere safe. You think something good is going to happen. And the game telegraphs like things are not going to go the way you think they are. But it turns out it's cannibals. Like,
does it almost feel like inconsequential, like in terms of your traversal and like your presence in the ecosystem and things like that? Like, you said earlier that you can kind of just, move around sort of that those conflicts and things like that in the open world settings.
Yeah. It's like you can finish a zone with having barely explored it. Like you can make this a very linear game if you just kind of tune out
and go to the mission. Yeah. Is there any like encouragement to, you know, like the
theoretically.
Something that we talk about a lot is like curiosity, like the sort of motivator that drives us to explore open spaces is like rewarding curiosity or like expecting
the way Breath of the Wild.
I'm thinking a lot about Breath of the Wild as we talk about this.
Or The Witcher 3, our other favorite open world.
Yeah. So does it feel like you do it and then it's not rewarded, or do you feel like you do it and there's nothing
there?
Yeah.
There's two things. One is that, again, the world's a pain in the ass to move through. Like, there's just places where, and again, not in an interesting way.
Yeah.
Like, there are points in the game where you'll see an area of interest on your map that you've sort of looked at through your binoculars. Oh, what's this camp in the distance?
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize what's between you and that camp is, like, a completely irradiated zone that you can't move through because you'll like sicken and die in the open ground. Or you can cut left and traverse a place crawling with bandits, or you can cut right and just have a bunch of monsters come after you if you get within 10 feet of them. And at that point, you're kind of looking at it like, well, what's at this area of interest? And what you find over time is that usually there's not much, right? It's a little bit of loot, maybe like an audio log or a journal that isn't that interesting. Or it'll just be another camp with a couple schmucks talking about like, boy, things suck here in the wasteland, don't they?
Mm.
And so you kind of get discouraged from visiting a lot of that stuff. And it isn't so... And this is the other thing. There's also an aesthetic element here, which is that things have to inspire your curiosity. You have to be like moved to check something out. And there are a few places in Metro that kind of do that, you know, twisted, deserted factories in the distance, kind of. But the most important locations turn out to be story locations where you can't actually explore them. You go through a linear encounter.
Gotcha.
But what you don't have is... Like in Stalker, there are places that just have a really identifying core aesthetic to them. Like there's this place in Stalker called the Brain Scorcher, which is just, you go in there and like from the first, there's like these really weird like low frequency noises coming through your headphones if you're playing it. And like the game just sounds weird and creepy. And then you see in the distance these like freaking high voltage power lines that are like sort of coruscating with energy. And you see those basically from the minute you enter the level, they're in the distance. And as you get closer to them, things just keep getting weirder and more disturbing. And so what is the entire zone is like crafted around this idea of mystery and menace and terror. In Metro, what you're going to see in the distance to motivate you as your landmark is a fishing shack with two guys standing around a burning oil drum. And that's it. And you know, when you get close to them, they'll be having that conversation of, ah, you bastard.
Yeah.
You stole my vodka. When do you think the slave traders will get here? Not soon enough, and that's it.
Oh, boy. See. They sound like a treasure and a treat.
Yeah. Last question. I'm curious because when we first talked about Metro, we were talking about how you were kind of like immediately put into English as the main language. Did you change it to Russian? Did that make a difference for you?
It does.
Yeah.
The Russian language just seems less stilted.
Yeah.
Like the kid sounds a lot more like a kid.
Yeah.
Little stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly, at least I can't tell that the voice acting is bad in Russian. It all sounds a little bit better on that front. But I don't know. It's also a story that's trying to tell a story with some moral stakes. And Cameron Kunzelman wrote a really good piece early this week about kind of the morality of this game and its worldview. But even that, I don't know, I still feel like it might be giving it too much credit. Like, there's this thing where, this thing that really started putting me off. You run across a cult, and the game's, the entire Metro series, if you are a murderous, like, you know, agent of chaos, just like blowing your way through these levels, mm-hmm. you're probably going to get a bad ending. Mm-hmm. And so you're encouraged, like, hey, be nonviolent as much as possible. Like, don't kill like 100 people if you don't have to, which, fair enough, fine. And so I found an avoidant, nonviolent solution to dealing with sort of the final boss of the first zone. I'm talking about the first zone in part because, like, beyond that, you start getting into real spoiler territory.
Gotcha.
But this just gives you a taste of, like, where this game's moral universe, like, how its morality is calibrated.
Gotcha.
So you can either fucking massacre these cultists, or you can kind of sneak through their base and open the passage out of their zone. I sneaked through, opened the passage. Nobody died. Like, I did the entire, like, last part of that zone, like, you know, very stealthy. Nobody got killed. Afterwards, you find out these people were, like, massacring groups of refugees coming through their area and, like, enslaving the rest and, like, stealing their shit.
Fuck that.
Right. And that's the thing. I'm like, okay, yeah, great. I didn't kill, you know, 100, 150 cultists, that maybe is good. At the same time, like, there are people in your party who are literally like, oh yeah, no, we survived the nuclear apocalypse, but then we came to this zone and, you know, all the men were sent away to, like, get killed by these monsters, and the rest of us had to turn over our possessions and live as servants.
We weren't allowed to leave.
And I'm like, was not fucking up this cult the right move? Is that the good thing?
Yeah. That's so bizarre to me because, like, why I've thought about this in the past, and, like, specifically with Undertale, but I was just reminded of, like, when player morality is sort of, like, held up on this, you know, fundamental, like, mechanical pedestal that drives the whole game. And what is it like? What does that do when it's in conflict with the morals that are already sort of in the game itself, in the other characters and things like that? In which, like, in this specific instance, you had a choice, and had you had that knowledge, I'm sure you. But the thing is, like, that question of morality, like, would it be better to, you know, kill the murderous fucking assholes, or, you know, not commit murder yourself or whatever? That's not even a question that's, like, being offered here. You're like so constrained into a binary of, like, you killing people is bad, you sparing people is good. And it just, I don't know how to grapple with that when you're like, how do you play the game you want in a game that's already decided this for you? Like, how do you sort of not even play the game you want, but you know, choose the morals that you are intending to act on and would, you know. So that sounds fucking messy as shit.
Yeah, and it's just disappointing for a series to end up like this, because the series has always been about morality systems in the apocalypse, right? Uh-huh. Like, mm-hmm. to what degree should you impose values on people who are being abusive or violent or exploitative, versus to what degree should you be allowing communities to kind of self-organize and self-determine? But what about situations where, like, it's self-determination for a couple people at the top, and then everyone else is just being coerced or held hostage? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I get these are often really loaded questions with, like, political resonance, but the problem with a game like Metro is we're not talking about, like, we're talking about the tyrants next door, mm-hmm. right? We're talking about, like, the slavers down the block that you had, like, that you can go deal with.
Yeah.
And the game's like, yeah, but killing's bad. And it's like, yeah, but literally I just walked through, like, 5 mass graves to Jesus get to these guys.
Christ.
So what are we doing here?
Yeah. Fuck that. That's messy as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still interesting in the way Metro games are interesting, but it's making me miss the first Metro game, which we did a 101 on, and I think does a better job of evoking the themes of its story and telling a story. Mm-hmm. And it's making me think a lot about just how good Stalker was and how the search continues for a worthy heir.
You ever play a game and just think about how many other games are better? You ever play a game and wish you were playing something else?
Yeah.
You know?
Big mood, IMO. Well, do you have any last words on Metro's messiness?
Probably not for now. I'll probably have some more. Like, when Patrick is back, if he's played more of it, I think he and I probably need to say a few final words over it, because this has been circled on the calendar for ages. Yeah. I don't think it's what we've been holding out for.
Are you near the end?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
It's kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And none of it is as good as you hoped. So it's very frustrating. An interesting failure in some ways, but it's the best parts about it are just covering ground that was covered better ages ago.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, is that the end of a trilogy? Or
yeah, it's kind of an accidental trilogy, though.
Okay, I see.
So they all kind of feel like discrete games in some ways.
I see. Well, hopefully, you know, there can be some lesson learned and things, you know.
Just make a new Stalker game.
Make a new Stalker game.
Long. Make a new Stalker.
A Stalker learned.
Yeah.
What?
I can't read from here. I can never read the numbers, so I can never tell when times. To take a break. Okay, cut this out. But
well, here's the fucked up thing is that we started the at actual 27 episode minutes.
All right, so we probably don't need a break yet. All right.
Yeah, we're good.
All right. Speaking of, how do I do this? Let me think.
Vehicles?
Speaking of vehicles, that's a great one.
Yeah.
Danielle, please talk to me about how you're finding Trials Rising.
Rising in my heart.
Is it?
True. I love it.
Yeah?
I am really having a very good time with this game. So I guess this is pulling back the curtain the tiniest little bit, but, you know, when we talk about games here at good old Waypoint, we do a little meeting where we talk about the games we'll be covering in the next few weeks, that sort of thing. This one was marked for, like, maybe a take, maybe a review, maybe we just talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I felt like I really enjoy talking about this on the podcast, but I don't have that many critical things to say about it other than, holy fucking shit, this has amazing game feel.
Yeah.
You know, just when a game feels wonderful to play, like there's just a very intense, like tactile sensation of, yes, I nailed it. Yes, I nailed it. Yes, I nailed it. Or, Should I screw it up? But I'm learning and I'm learning, which I know does not sound like the most articulate way of pointing,
that makes complete fucking
painting
sense.
This, but it just feels so good to play this game. It has wonderful game feel, great mouthfeel, you know, of course. it just feels very, very fun. It does feel like a very well-designed game, like a very polished game.
Yeah.
It is a series of really fun racetracks and basically platformer racetracks that you're just sort of figuring out how to play well through this whole thing.
Can you talk to me about one of your favorite levels that you've done so far?
Yes, there is an amusement park level. It's in the Europe, I think it's in the Europe section, and I don't remember what city it's supposed to be in, but there's like a portion of it that is very sort of roller coastery. My favorite part of it is the like tunnel of doom. There's like a goofy like fake horror, you know, kind of segment. It goes through a lot of different types of theme park rides, and it has like a castle with fake fireworks in the background, and like all those things. Like it's very like both Disney World and also a place that's much cornier than Disney World. Like so, there's like the castle. It's like, oh, it's Disney, and then it's like, oh, the tunnel of doom. Okay, I'm sure there's an actual name for this.
No, I think it is.
Is it Tunnel of Doom or am I just banana pants right now?
Those things have specific names.
I don't know, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's like, I can picture like this corny, ride in my brain.
Like,
it's
like on a track, like a almost like a train ride on a track where scary, spooky things kind of pop out at you.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally.
Skulls and skeletons. And
is that happening while you're going through it?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It's so much fun. There's another one that's great that is like a Hollywood course. It's a little earlier on in the game, but there's like lights, camera, action, and you're going through different sort of movie genres. It's like you're going from set to set. I mean, everything is a continuous track. Like every trials track, maybe there are some exceptions, but every trials track is just a continuous track through all these chaotic things happening, all these types of terrain and everything. And that one has like a fun sci-fi movie set. Like you go from like an action movie to like a sci-fi movie and you have to break at a certain point and there's like aliens and laser beams and
that's really good.
There's a lot going on just sort of visually on every track, which I really appreciate. Yeah. I love that kind of stuff. I love like looking at the background people when you're at the starting line and like who's dressed up
in a certain
way.
Is that a distraction?
Not really, because like once you're going, you're really paying attention to like the physics and kind of getting it right. But there is a lot of like fun stuff going on around it. And again, like, I think I may have mentioned this on Monday, but I really appreciated that there's like a Trials University segment that teaches you particular skills in a very cool way. It reminded me a little bit of the old Crazy Taxi games, how they had like the crazy pyramid. It's not quite as intense, at least at first. They start kind of going into those like more difficult skills, but it's like, this will make you much better at the main game by playing these very discreet little fun lessons.
Are they specific to like certain sort of skills?
Yeah, it's like, here's how to get the most air on a jump, or not that you're always going for air, because that's not always the best thing either, but like, here's how to get better flow by leaning this way into a hill and leaning this way off of a hill, things like that, and like how to get like a more consistent speed and more consistent flow. There's like how to do the bunny hops.
That's
like
really rad.
Staying on the back tire and doing the little cool hop, that kind of thing. So yeah. Really useful to actually get, because again, it is my first Trials game.
Yeah.
And I know people love this series, and I'm coming into it like, this looks like fun, and I'm super interested, but Lord knows, I don't know how I'm going to do in it. And it did feel like that helped me ease into it quite a bit. And the first tracks are not super difficult. Once you kind of get a sense of like, just how to lean and land yourself, you're not going to get like some great score or some awesome speed run, but you'll be able to more or less make your way to the next.
Right.
It's very fun. Just a fun-ass game with a good-ass game feel. And
that sounds like such a blast.
Good time on a bike, you know?
I'm trying to have a good time on a bike.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Except I'm scared of them.
I am a little scared of bikes. That's another weird thing. I will make this brief. But as an EMT, very afraid of riding a bike in a city. Just very afraid.
Let alone
some of the things I've seen.
Through a fucking obstacle course.
Yeah, exactly. And like the humor in this game is whenever you screw up, like your character just ragdolls. It's it is kind of funny. It is kind of like, it's okay to laugh at the grievous bodily harm, you know, in a certain way. But it is played very tongue-in-cheek. Like, it's very clear that the humor in this game is...
Yeah.
We're having a joyous time with physics. This is not...
Yeah.
You know.
It's almost like that, like, Tony Hawk Pro Skater sort of... When you fucking bail. And you're just like, all right, I'm already bailing. Let's see how far I can take this. Like, how...
Let's go with it.
Let's just go as far as I can. I'm already bailing.
Bailing.
That sounds really fun.
Yeah, I'm liking it.
Yeah. How much do you have ahead of you?
I have no idea.
Is
probably
it just like
a lot,
in
to
the
be
air?
Honest.
This is kind of like a...
There are so many tracks in this game. At least I'm getting the sense. So, yeah, I've played a few hours at this point, and I'm not great, but I am having a really good time. So I'm getting the sense that there's many leagues ahead of me.
Ooh.
Because there are many races and many sort of activities and many little contracts in the courses that I've been focusing on, because I want to, like, get a little better before I actually get frustrated and challenged by it. But
that's honestly,
I think it does a good job by offering you a lot of stuff to do at any given level.
So. Yeah, that's probably a really good way to go about it. And, like, really, because I feel like it's, like, one of those easy to learn but hard to master.
So far, I'm getting that sense
sort of vibe.
Sure.
So when you kind of take the time to spend a little bit longer on one level instead of just, like, worrying about progression and, like, actually think about the skills, like, internalizing those skills and those, like, physics systems that are getting thrown at you, then you're in like such a better place for the next
come rushing at me
adventure.
Exactly.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
That's a good time.
Anything.
That's good. It's just great.
Bikes are just bikes. Bikes are the fun.
I'm gonna play it more this weekend, probably.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Why don't we take a quick break? You'll listen perhaps to an ad, who could say, and we'll be right back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey.
Yo.
Hi, Kato.
Hey, how's it going?
You're playing a game.
I am. Oh, yeah, I am playing a game.
Tell me about a game that I don't think I know anyone playing right now, but I really am curious to hear about it. It's called Ape Out.
Ape Out.
What are you playing it on, and what is it, and how is it?
I'm on Switch.
On Switch.
And it's... So, the, like, elevator pitch to me feels like it'd be, like... like Hotline Miami, but only the bits where you throw things.
Okay.
By way of Saul Bass.
Wow.
And also a killer jazz drum soundtrack.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it good?
It's really it's kind of Tetris Effect esque. In that it reacts and changes to what's happening in the moment. So what you are, you play as this gorilla. It's a top-down view, and it's the graphics is very, it's very graphical. It's very design. It looks like if you know the designer Saul Bass, he's famous for opening credit scenes of.
Very '60s logo art.
Yes, yeah,
super stylized. Like, yeah,
and like the text itself is like ripped straight off of the like style of text that he had in a lot of his openings.
Right.
And like it's a top down view, and you're in like a cage, and there's like a couple cages next to you with dead gorillas in them.
Oh fuck!
And some scientists like outside, just like hanging out. And you just thing you do is you break through the glass, and there's a scientist standing right there, and they fly and like explode against the wall.
Oh my god!
It's like wild and hyper violent and super like flat colors and very frenetic, because you'll get into situations where like you're like trying to escape this like facility.
Yeah,
and there's at first, there's just like a couple scientists. They don't have any weapons or anything. But then there's like security shows up, and it's everyone has guns.
Uh-huh.
And so what you can do is you can either push them, and if they hit a wall in their trajectory, they're dead.
Okay.
Or you can grab them and hold them, and they'll kind of struggle and like shoot off a shot.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening is like you'll grab one out of a group, and like it'll that person will shoot one of the other ones, and then you throw them into the third, and then you keep running, and like. This whole time, there's this amazing, like, if you've ever seen Birdman and remember the, like, consistent drumming in the background of that movie.
Totally.
This is the first level, at least, is almost exactly like that. And, like, whenever, like, somebody hits a wall, there's a fucking cymbal crash. And then, like, as, like, more and more enemies start to, like, fill the screen, like, it gets more frenetic and frantic. And you're just, like, running and trying to get out. Hence, Ape Out.
Yes.
And it just has such a good style. Like, the... It's, yeah, they, like, somebody really, really loved Saul Bass's work and was like, I want to make a game that looks like this.
Yeah.
And, like, the way that each, like, there's, like, a world, there's, like, four worlds, and each world has, like, eight, like, levels. And, like, they're presented as, like, records, and, like, each track is one of the, like, levels or whatever.
Gotcha.
And the, like, music is consistent throughout, like, constantly going, and like it introduces each level with like a new title card where like you're still running and moving, mm-hmm. but like the titles are coming up and they slowly like introduce other. It's really interesting because like, I was like, is this the whole game? That's great if it's the whole game and it's just like these like three types of enemies. But of course they like keep introducing new wrinkles that make like keep it fresh mm-hmm. and interesting. Like partway through they introduce this like. Enemy that explodes. So mm-hmm. normally if you were like close to a wall and like you threw them against the wall, it's like whatever, that doesn't matter. But this one explodes and if you get caught in the AOE of that, you die. So you have to like...
Oh, so you're one shot.
Yeah. Well, no, not really. Like you're one shot for the explosions.
Gotcha.
But normally you can take a couple shots and there's no like health bar, but the way you can tell is how much blood you're leaving behind.
Gotcha.
And all of this just looks super stylish and like very well designed and... it's $15, like super cheap, like probably 2 hours of like getting through the game itself.
Yeah.
But then you can go back and do A, speed runs. Like it keeps track of your time. So you're trying to like get through as quickly as possible. Or B, there's an arcade mode where you have a timer, but you're trying to get a better score, which includes being fast, but also like getting combos of like throwing people into people and things like that.
Being
so you
creative.
Can try to get
Oh, I like that.
That's cool.
And and like one example of like how they also like keep it like interesting is the second like world
uh-huh.
is this you're at the top of a high rise.
Uh-huh.
And so like you start throwing people out windows and like there's this really cool animation, like the perspective thing that they do where as the people fall down and after a certain point you hear like sirens, like somebody's obviously called like the authorities.
Oh,
and then like as you get you like travel down this like you're traveling down each floor, eventually you'll start getting aimed at by snipers. You'll see like a laser coming in through the windows and like you just have to keep moving in order for them to not be able to get a bead on you. And it makes it like where like moments where like I would stop, I would hold someone and it was kind of like drag them around until I could throw them into someone.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do that anymore because if I stood still for too long, they would be able to take me out. So like things like that that keep like, you know, adding interesting new wrinkles to this like very simple formula.
Yeah.
But like small, super fun, super stylish. Like, oh my, the style is just dripping off this game and like in the way it's presented with its graphics and the reactive soundtrack.
Does the musical score evolve with it? Like, because
yes.
I was watching a trailer, I was curious if basically it's sort of like Tom Morello-esque drumline, like that
right.
is the sound of the game, or if that evolves and changes.
It changes. So the first level is very like standard, like snare and a few toms and the cymbal, like jazz drum that you know. And then like
mm-hmm.
the other levels add, like, there's one that has like more. A bongo sound, like different types of percussive instruments. One has more claps. Like it changes level to level, but the like kind of way that it evolves or reacts to you is pretty similar throughout. But it's still, you know, so it's not like it would have after the first level been maybe a little too droning if it didn't change musical styles. But it does, and that's a really good decision that they made.
So you're saying it's Donkey Kong Country. What was the name of that awesome game you controlled with the bongos?
Oh,
Donkey Konga or something.
Konga was the music game, but there was actually a platformer that you controlled with the clapping and with bongos, and it was awesome.
Oh my god, I don't know about this. This sounds really fun.
Yeah, you had like the plastic
really
bongos.
Yeah.
I thought it was a drum game, but clearly I'm wrong.
No,
there was Donkey Konga, and then there was like a Donkey Kong.
Yeah, you could
Jungle
control
Beat,
it with...
maybe?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Jungle Beat.
Oh,
that sounds right.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
It was kind of good. It was like a good platformer.
Honestly, you should figure out how to, like, jerry-rig those drums to your Switch somehow and play Ape
I
Out
think
with
it
that.
Came out on the on the Wii. Like, it came... So it was a GameCube game with the cool bongo controller. And then...
Yeah.
Came
to the
Wii. I just got so excited that this thing existed.
I remembered that peripheral. Like,
yeah.
I remember
yeah.
that.
Like, those, remember those.
Yeah. I've seen, like, people play, like, first-person shooters with them or
right.
some shit.
Yeah.
Like, Overwatch or
Very
something.
Very fun and wild.
Well, Ape Out sounds really good. That comes to us from Devolver Digital. Gabe
right.
Cozzillo, Bennett Foddy, and Matt Bach are the developers behind it.
Yeah. Matt Bach, I think, used to work at, why can't I think of it? The makers of the million dance games. They're really great dance games. They're in Boston.
Just Dance?
Harmonix?
Oh, Harmonix.
I believe
that would make sense. That's probably who they got to do the like music stuff then. Yeah, that makes sense.
That sounds really rad.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Has that been like your chill out game? Is that kind of like...
It just came out yesterday. So like,
oh, really? So it's new.
Yeah, yeah. I like picked it up and just... this is the thing that I had mentioned to Daniel earlier this morning when I was coming in. Normally, I don't use headphones with my Switch because I'm playing it on the subway.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like, I'll listen to a podcast while I play whatever, like do something to the beach on the way to work. And this one, I was like, I need to.
I was worried you're like, I don't use headphones on my Switch because I'm on the subway and I want to share that game audio with
No. I mean, it's muted.
And I was like,
muted.
What the fuck?
No, the Switch is muted.
I'm a monster.
Wow.
I would never. God. Oh my God.
Honestly, I think, no. Now that I think about it, like, Friday morning on the L train is probably not the best place for like this like percussion heavy like bing bong boom bada ba. But
or it might be a good soundtrack to everything going on.
Honestly, true.
Friday morning on the L.
True.
Depends on your mood. Yeah. You feel like.
Yeah,
that's very true. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah,
gotta check it out. Hey, something happened this week that I need to talk about. Yes. It happened in the wee hours of the morning, aka 9 a.m. And it was 7 minutes of...
Not enough,
but holy shit.
Yes.
We have a new Pokemon game coming.
Finally.
We knew it was coming.
Yeah.
But now we have a name for it, and we have our starting Pokemon.
And where it is. Or, like,
oh, yeah.
The, like, setting.
Fucking
it's like
the
Pokemon
UK.
Glasgow, right?
Yeah.
Pokemon Glasgow. It's Pokemon... the map, when you look at the overview map that they put out, it's, like, a nice illustrated version of what it'll be in the game. It looks like...
The UK.
The UK. Yeah.
I saw a comparison to Westeros as well, which I think Westeros is just like based on the UK.
Yeah,
but
so.
Pokemon Let's Glasgow is the next.
That's the name of the episode.
Wow.
There it is. Now, this is why you're the captain of this ship, Natalie.
Holy shit. That's too good.
Pokemon Sword and Shield is coming out later this year, probably around holiday. They said late 2019, I think, but so holiday. I have questions.
Yeah.
Is Pikachu gonna fucking kill me with a sword? Because I hope
so. Are they giving the Pokemon weapons? Finally. They can protect themselves with something more than their natural.
From our bullshit trainer asses.
Yeah, right?
Free yourselves, Pokemon. Free. I'm really excited. I'm excited for this theme. I'm really, really excited for this theme. If you haven't seen it yet, the Pokemon Direct is up on YouTube. It's about 7 minutes long, and it basically goes through some gameplay. It talks about, gives you that I think the map was in the video.
Yeah.
And it takes us through the three starters. But I'm really excited. So we'll talk about the starters in a second. But I really want to talk about the Sword and Shield like motif.
Yeah.
Because I'm really like curious as to what Sword and Shield. First of all, there's already fucking Sword Shield Pokemon.
Yeah. Yep. Like,
can we just like? Honestly, lore reasons Pokemon might need to happen.
Yeah, we might need to go through this.
I don't even know if we could.
Fucking.
I don't even know if it's even feasible to fucking parse this
Pokemon.
Not nightmare, but hellish timeline. The Pokemon timeline is hellish, IMO. But I appreciate it and I respect them.
Yeah.
Is Team Rocket, are they fucking knights?
I don't...
Like, what are they?
Yeah, it's like, it feels like they,
Team
like...
Team Trebuchet?
They're like, what can we do? It's set in,
Is...
we've run out of colors and gems, apparently. We can't go back to those.
Yeah.
Because we're done with that. Even though there's plenty of colors they haven't used yet.
Yeah.
So now we're on to objects and, I guess England equals
swords and
shields? Like, that's the wild thing, is that was it black and white or X and Y? I think X and Y.
X and Y took place in, like, Paris type.
Yeah,
like
it was like a...
France type.
Yeah. Which, like, they had, I don't know.
There was an Eiffel Tower, basically, and, like, some cafes.
Yeah.
And chateaus.
But it's just, like, X and, like, X, they just, like, X and Y, I don't know, letters, because the Pokemon look kind of like those letters, I guess. Like, they couldn't figure it out then, and now they're like, this is closer, right? This is kind of Europe-y.
Yeah. Is my question... Oh, yeah, fuck, wait. Is... The are the legendaries going to be a sword and a shield
Pokemon?
Or my question is Team Rocket like are the two opposing factions? Is one just like fucking Goofy and one Sora? Like, is one just like Goofy with a shield in front of him,
bashing
just like
people with a shield?
Like, everyone's holding a shield, and you're like, okay, I get it, you maxed out your defense, but like, I got high ass attack, and maybe I'm a little bit more agile, so. You know, I'm very curious as to what that theme will come out like. And I am very curious to see how they make a different Pokemon from Aggroslash to be these legendaries. Yeah,
I had a thought upon looking at some of this. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with now famous, because it's the 10-year anniversary this year of Sonic and the Black Knight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
not.
The medieval-themed Sonic game on the Wii.
I am absolutely not.
Actually, at the time.
It's not.
Characters include Sonic, Lancelot, with Shadow.
Of course.
Swain, who is Knuckles, Percival, who is Blaze, Blacksmith, who is Tails, Lady of the Lake, Amy Rose, Galahad, Silver the Hedgehog. There's more. This immediately reminded me of that as, like, cute, cartoonish... children's property that you know, people who are not just children appreciate, taking on this amazing Knights of the Round Table type of theme.
Here's the thing too, is that we've seen, so they show like in that direct shots of like the gameplay and like the setting and stuff, and it's not even set in like medieval times or anything. It looks like a modern, like, or semi-modern at least, like maybe
it's like a fucking London high street.
Yeah, it's just like regular ass, but still they're like, no,
sword and shield.
Knights.
It is something else.
Yeah.
I need everyone to look up the starter Pokemon, please, for Pokemon Sword and Shield, and I need everyone to give me their first thoughts. Rob, I'm guessing you haven't seen them yet, so
no.
Okay. Hold on. Actually, I want Rob to go first because he has no further. He has
no link.
Here, I'll pop it to you really quick.
Yeah.
People who follow the Waypoint Twitter already know my feelings.
Oh, I'm excited to hear everybody's feelings on this.
I have thoughts too.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell me what you surmise from this. Read this work for me, please.
Okay, well, on the left, we have some sort of tropical bird monkey known as Grookey.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle,
what's Grookey's vibe? Have,
feigning submissiveness, but I wouldn't turn my back on Grookey. Grookey's ingratiating.
Yeah.
Unctuous is what Grookey is.
Wow.
Okay. Okay. I'm here for it.
Okay, so in the middle,
yes,
we have Scorbunny, which appears to be a bunny wearing Bomba's socks and a breathe right strip across its nose. Scorbunny looks like a little much, to be honest. Like, Scorbunny has a lot of energy naturally, but the energy that Scorbunny is presenting here, I do not think is entirely natural. It's been augmented by something. And Scorbunny doesn't want you to know, but like Scorbunny is like ready to take over the Jerry Lewis telethon, is the way I'd put it.
Oh, fuck.
Wow.
Please
on the right. On the right.
Yeah. Tell me.
We've
about
got
the right.
Some DreamWorks bug looking motherfucker named Sobble, who just watched someone get like killed in front of him.
He just watched like, Bambi's mother get blown away.
Yeah. Like I don't know. Like. This is the only way to put it. Like, something horrific has just happened in front of Sobble. Sobble will never be the same.
No.
No.
And yet there is something just off-putting enough about that design that you kind of think Sobble had it coming. Sobble deserves to feel this way.
No! Protect my poor boy.
No. No. Again, like that OG DreamWorks look, it's just like, fuck off out of here. You're not cute.
Damn!
Kato, oh my God. Kato, would you like to defend your son?
Sobble is a perfect, beautiful son who's just seen too much of this world and needs to be protected.
I am inclined to agree. What's wild to me, Danielle, please.
So, I love Pokemon. You all should know I've put hundreds of hours into Pokemon. And I was more insulted. I think, Rob, you're on the money with Score Bunny and maybe Sobble. Jury's out. However, I really like Grookey. I think that Grookey is sweet and innocent. And that's could probably fuck you up with his beak or her beak.
Yeah.
And also probably whip your face with their tail if you get too close.
That's the issue.
I also really like the leaf / hair piece thing. I don't know. I usually don't go for the grass starter. In fact, I don't think I've ever gone.
Yeah, because why the fuck
a grass starter?
You?
Yo, but this hold on. Snivy's cool.
Grookey is just so fucking cute and like is a very sweet and kind to you if you are kind and sweet back. But Grookey will fucking kill you. Will destroy.
That's the thing. Grookey will turn on you in a second. I don't know if I can deal with that sort of stress. I'm sorry, Grookey. Please don't kill me.
Grookey will protect you with a sword.
This is what Sobble is looking at. Sobble just saw Grookey like go off.
Yeah.
Like everyone, like Score Bunny was playing with Grookey and was hey, Grookey. And then, like, Grookey just like fucking ripped Score Bunny apart from the ears down. And Sobble, like, is never going to get that image out of their head.
Yeah, Score Bunny gives me some definite Happy Tree Friends. I haven't seen Happy Tree Friends in 1,000 years. I'm sure it's fucking horrible, but it gives me definitely some of those vibes. But here's my take. Grookey, if Grookey's final evolution is a fucking bird, I'm going to be upset, is what I'll say first.
Okay.
Flying.
Flying grass type.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It fuck me all the way up.
Yeah, shit.
I hope it's not a beak.
It's a beak.
I think maybe
it's gonna be a beak.
I think maybe Grookey just ate some Cheetos. That's my canon.
That's what's the okay. There we go.
And that's and maybe he found like the trainer's like stash of cheese puffs and just like went in.
Just fucking
and
went.
Then Grookey's like just training. You like, want to get in on this?
Yo, Grookey.
Do you want some?
Yo, Grookey. It's picture day. We gotta take. And I'm like, oh fuck. Well, I guess I'm just gonna go like this. All right. Score Bunny is a jock for sure.
Yeah.
Score Bunny has like those Bluetooth fucking goofy ass headphones that like go around your neck instead of like around your head and is absolutely a jock. And Sobble, here's my take. Why make Sobble cry? Why? IMO, Pokemon should be happy, and I love Sobble, and I want to protect Sobble with all of my heart, but I don't want Sobble to be sad, and I just want to, I hope that with Sobble's evolutions, Sobble finds happiness. That is my hope for Sobble. Maybe Sobble's just a little nervous. Who's not? I'm a fucking anxious wreck. We all know that. So I can relate, and I just hope that Sobble feels better in future times. What I will say is it is uncanny the degree to which these Pokemon look like the fucking Powerpuff Girls.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
You're seeing it now, right?
Oh, no.
Yep. What were their names again?
Bubbles, Blossom, and Buttercup.
Yep.
Okay.
Please. Have been several studies done on the internet so far, but...
Did you drop the... Said that's wrong.
Just swapped. That's all.
Ashcraft
it's just
was
a swap.
On this case.
Just a swap. So,
these are concerning.
Literally, Score Bunny has like the bow that Blossom has in her hair.
It's amazing.
Bubbles and Sobble have bangs, and Grookey's ears are just in just the same exact shape as Buttercup's hair. And yep. So, with that knowledge. And their like presumed like characteristics are like basically the same,
the
right?
The same colors and fucking
same colors. Grookey's supposed to be like mischievous, but like this is canon, by the way. This is from the Pokemon canon. It doesn't have to be your canon, Rob.
Someone found the but someone translated it.
Translated. I'm gonna find it. Okay. But Grookey's like kind of mischievous but curious. Extreme Buttercup move. Blossom is like sporty and
I found it.
Oh, you did?
Someone went to the Japanese website and hit translate on it, and for Grookey it says Grookey is a curious, tricky bastard.
Yeah. I think we're right
honestly.
I think we did it, kids.
And Sobble is like Bubbles, who is just so innocent and pure that whomst among us could not be corrupted with such a pure heart.
What I'm most afraid of for yes. Sobble is that Sobble obviously looks a lot like, oh God.
Bubbles?
No, the previous starter.
Mudkip?
Yes, looks so much like Mudkip. Mudkip is the sweetest, nice, just the cutest little thing that evolves into the creepiest fucker. Marshstomp.
Oh yeah.
Who just looks like a fucking creeper, and I'm just worried that Sobble will go down that.
Yeah, Marshtomp like, looks look fucking dead shit. In the eyes. Okay,
that's
there's no soul
nice.
Behind that.
that's horrifying, and I want Sobble to be fierce and cute, and not fierce and creepy.
I agree. My Whoa. Opinion.
Yeah, it's not good, and it comes from like the cutest
what
little
the fuck
thing.
What art is this?
This is why I don't like Generation 3. The art feels off.
Yeah, the art is
it's weird.
Scary. What happened
I'm sorry,
here?
So
but Mudkip
no
is
offense
so cute.
If you like Gen 3, but I could never play those games.
Mudkip is adorable.
Mudkip is adorable. And yeah. Here's the thing, is IMO, third evolutions often lose the charm of the first evolution.
Yeah,
there is
true.
Very rarely instances in which third evolutions retain that... They've seen too much at this point.
Right.
In your yes. third evolution, you're like level shit. 30 fucking something. You've been just pitted against Pokemon after Pokemon. You've just KO'd like a generation, essentially.
Yep.
And how the fuck else are you supposed to be? But like this weathered, like I've seen some shit type of motherfucker who's like maybe not as cute as you were back at, you know, level 5. So I get it, but I wish to retain some of that pure.
Well, we all want to retain that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the tragedy of growing up and like gaining experience, but like I mean, look, we all have that moment where we are all Sobble.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually we just turn into Rambo at the end of First Blood.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Nothing is over.
I hope not. I hope not for me.
Here's the thing. We're like, I've already, you know, I've laid put a line in the sand. I'm sorry for this horrible mixed metaphor I've tried to get out. I've picked Sobble as my favorite.
As the one you will defend.
But when they release... God damn it. When they release the second and third evolutions, that will probably definitely
you know what?
Change.
No, what? No, you're not allowed to look at it.
What?
You've already chosen Sobble.
No.
You are not allowed
I
to
cannot.
Look at second and third. It should
I
be
cannot.
A surprise.
It's going
to
happen on my Twitter. I'm not even going to go
true.
Looking. It's just
yeah,
going to be
just
there. But, that's... like, this happened with Litten. Litten was so cute.
I forgot about Litten.
Yeah, Litten was adorable. I was like, hell yeah, I want this little baby fire cat.
Oh,
so cute. And then it turned into a Cinnaroar, who's cool, but like not what I was like hoping for. Like this weird wrestler cat.
Yeah.
Which
don't,
is I
don't
like,
hate on
I
Big the Cat.
The middle evolution was pretty
Big
good
the
though.
Cat's great.
Don't
what
hate on
the
Big the Cat.
Was the second one called? The second evolution was, or,
yeah.
sorry, the first evolution was pretty cute
yeah.
still.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Litten here.
Litten is adorable.
I love Litten.
We should talk about the actual game. So
we should.
Some
well,
things...
we were.
I mean, we are. That
We
that
are.
Was all part
this
of it.
Is all important. But one thing that I'll note that I noticed from the trailer that a lot of people are talking about is the fact that random encounters are back.
Yeah.
Right.
This is obviously a controversial topic. Because
depending on who you are or who you ask, random encounters never left. Because some people don't count. Let's go. Some people are like, that's just like it's a go tie-in. Like, we don't count that one.
Really?
Yeah, it's rude. Like, I like Let's Go.
I like Deluxe. I think Let's Go added so many quality of life improvements.
Yes, absolutely.
Here's the thing. A lot of people have complained to me about the fact that there doesn't seem to be much like evolution in the trajectory of the Pokemon franchise. Like, not much has really deterred from the start. Like, yes.
Simple JRPGs.
Yeah, we pretty much have the same game we were playing, you know, in 90 whatever.
Right.
So to me it's like the things that have become improvements or the things that have become like different in the game are these like quality of life improvements. Like, I forget which one had the Pokédex that could pinpoint exactly what like the silhouettes of which Pokemon I think it was Black and White of which Pokemon you're. So for people that are completionists, you know, you could see which area, how many Pokemon you're missing, and you could like see the silhouette and try and guess who it was and, you know, strategize to try and catch them. And so, and Let's Go Pokemon, or Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee added so many quality of life improvements in terms of being able to see what's right in front of you, see the Pokemon. If you know, are looking for something, you don't have to bother with random encounter after random encounter after random encounter. So, and I mean, it's weird to have not had to battle Pokemon. Like, that was, like, everything felt weird at first, but then it became pretty natural.
Because battling Pokemon was never hard.
Yeah.
It was always just like, I have to do this in order to catch them, get them low.
Which RPGs have grinds. Like,
But here's the thing. There's still grind in that game through the trainer battles. Like, you still have to go through the battles with other trainers.
Yeah.
And, like, that's where the real game always was as far as, like, actual encounters.
Yeah.
And so, like, when Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee got rid of the random encounters with wild Pokemon, I think it did two things. First of all, seeing the Pokemon in the world made the world feel more alive.
Yes.
Just by seeing them running around in the grass.
Yes, I loved it.
Which was great. Also giving you the ability to avoid them through, you know, hand skill instead of, like, having to buy repels and, like, you know, wait. Like, it's just, like, it was a more engaging, like, when I went through Mount Moon. Because we should mention, so Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee are remakes of Red and Blue.
Mm-hmm.
So same area, same story. Essentially, they did some tweaks to it that made it more interesting for people who have already played Red and Blue. But when I went through Mount Moon this time, normally you go through there and you have to take a bunch of repels. Otherwise, you're going to be accosted by a Zubat every, like, two steps.
Which, like, fucking poison you in the first, like, go. And then you're, like, fucked up trying to run out with your, like, poison Pokemon. And every step you take, it's like, and you're like,
ugh. But in this one, there were still a shit ton of Zubat in that cave.
Yeah.
But you could, you know, duck and weave, you know, escape
them.
Yeah,
you're like juking these fucking Zubat.
And it was great. That was, like, actually kind of fun to add this new, like, movement. Because otherwise, you're just, like, walking through the world and it's, like, because it was an older game, the, like, environments aren't that, like, exciting or anything. So this, I'm sad that in this game, it looks like they're going back to the old style walk around and you will randomly encounter Pokemon in the tall grass like most of the other games.
What's wrong, Rob?
Have you ever played Pokemon, Rob?
No.
Okay.
But I do just love the image Kato just conjured there. First, you're just trying to enjoy a stroll and you just keep getting accosted by fucking Zubats. And you know, lurking in the tall grass, they're Pokemon.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying. But
in my head, like, it's like Full Metal Jacket. Like, Kato's just, like, in there. Just knows fucking Pokemon are in there.
And I know it. Little safari hat going on, just kind of.
That's really good.
Clever girl.
Well,
One last thing on Pokemon I wanted to mention.
Mm-hmm.
which I see, I think is interesting, is that they've aged up the protagonist.
They have.
Which is weird. Normally, you are
10.
Yeah, 10 to, I think, 13 once you're old. And I think it speaks to the fact that they know that their audience is older now at this point. And
yeah.
Which could be interesting for what sort of narrative they're trying to tell this time around, whether or not they're also going to age up the like complexity of it and themes. So we'll see.
I hope that it has the same character customization from like X and Y.
That'd be great.
Sun and Moon weirdly didn't have as much.
There was still a little bit in there.
But like
just different shorts.
Yeah. It was like shorts and like you couldn't do like eye color and things like that, which I thought was really fun about X and Y. So I'm hoping for, you know, character customization. How old are they supposed to be?
I don't know if there's an a number age that they've said anything about.
But they just like look
the models like look, they're look taller models.
They're taller and stuff.
Like they look like older teens of some sort.
Well, I'm super excited. I'm excited to see more stuff.
And this
about
is gonna be
it.
On the Switch, right?
Yes, that's another big thing. This is the first
about. Yeah.
Like, yes, technically Let's Go was new, but like this is the first like mainline Pokemon game on a home console. Normally they've all been on handhelds and like there have been some spin-offs on home consoles, but never a full mainline story.
Brand new release.
I wonder if they'll ever do something like what was it? Pokemon the one on GameCube.
Coliseum.
Yeah, Coliseum. I wonder if they'll ever do something like that. That game just looked so weird, but like in a good way.
Yeah, it was like you could catch Pokemon from other trainers somehow.
Yeah, it was like kind of fucked up. Yeah. It was a little dark. It was a little dark. You were like basically Team Rocket. Yeah. But that experimentation, I think, hasn't been around in a really long time. And I'm curious to see if, you know, it'll ever come back.
Is Team Rocket not good?
Team Rocket are the bad guys.
Yeah. In the original series.
Remember Jesse and James? Jesse, James. Team
I
Rocket.
Know Jesse, James.
Same, but different.
I'm just excited it's on Switch because that means I can play it. Because I basically can't play handheld games anymore, which makes me very sad because I was a huge DS person.
Yeah.
I sure loved me my DS, and I put hundreds of hours into Pokemon Alpha Sapphire and a whole bunch into X and Y and quite a bit into S&M as well.
Sun and Moon.
For all y'all. I'm sorry for who I am. But I can't really spend much time on a handheld system anymore because my fucked up wrist. So the fact that it's on Switch, which I can actually like hold in such a way that is fine for my wrist, I'm like, yes, I'm excited about Pokemon again.
Yay.
That's great.
That's awesome. Into it. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
Well, it's nearing our closing time, but I think we have one question.
The really fun one.
That we'd like to answer that we've been looking forward to for a minute now.
I haven't seen this.
It's a really good one.
It's a good one.
Good.
to close us out, everyone, I would like to hear the answers to this question. Do we have who this is from?
I think it was from Mo.
Max. Oh, it's from Mo.
I believe it was from Mo.
What's up, Mo?
Wait, which one? Oh, okay, part one and part two. Got you. Sup, Mo. Thanks for sending this question in. There's two parts. Part one. Which three celebrities / historical figures would you want in your JRPG party? Mo says, my picks are Rihanna, Larry David, and J.R. Smith, but Tony Bourdain is threatening J.R.'s position on the squad.
Oh, that's so good.
Okay. Anyone have first thoughts?
I would like Amanda Nunes.
Uh-huh.
Double two-weight women's current championship.
Absolutely.
Of the UFC and first openly gay fighter in the UFC. Well, first openly gay champion. She was not the first openly gay fighter.
Mm-hmm.
She's amazing and can kick anybody's ass, and she's really funny.
Hell
yeah. I feel like those are really important things. Like, she's both an amazing fighter, like a great brawler,
yeah,
kick ass, and it also is like a really funny and warm person.
Mm-hmm.
And also like the whole, you know, she's queer. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I would also appreciate having Helena Bonham Carter,
ooh,
on my team, just for the rogue element, for the wild card element. I feel like she'd be very interesting to spend some time with.
Yeah.
So she's on there for sure.
Okay.
And Shirley Manson from Garbage, the front woman of Garbage, because she doesn't give a fuck.
Nice.
I think she might be from Glasgow. Pokemon Let's Glasgow. Which also might be fun. I feel like that's a good gallery.
That's really for good. Myself. That's really good.
Gallery. I'm sorry.
That's your team name. That's your squad
gallery.
Name.
Gallery.
Rob, you look ponderous.
I defer.
You defer?
This Bourdain situation, I'm thinking about it.
Oh, that's a good, yeah.
So will you come back to us with something?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Okay, okay.
Just think about the third spot.
Okay. Kato.
I'm having trouble as well.
Natalie, I'm sure you know.
Hold on.
I don't know shit.
What is the category again? Just celebrities?
Celebrities or historical figures in your JRPG party?
I mean, when you open it up to historical figures, Jesus, all of history.
Mm-hmm.
So many people.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
A lot of people been on this earth.
Too many people been on this earth.
Okay, I'll try to think of some. Mine would be, okay.
Just go with your first instinct. That's the thing. Don't think too hard.
I was going to say.
What?
No.
She got cut immediately before you could even finish her name. Mine would be, who has wealth? I would bring
oh god,
I would want someone that could fucking fit the squad and put us all
you
up
need a backer. You need, and,
we need a backer. So I'm trying to think.
The merchant class,
Chrissy Teigen. Mm-hmm. Because cool. Is hilarious.
Yes.
Would understand. I don't know if she's played a JRPG yet, but she would get it pretty quickly.
Right.
Because she's a gamer.
She's a gamer.
She is an amazing cook.
Okay.
And also can front the bill. So she's my first pick. My second pick, I need a bard. Who would be my bard? My bard would be... Hold on.
No.
Gerard Way.
Oh, good.
Gerard Way.
Hell yeah.
Who, just would have some fucking, I don't know. You know what the fuck it is. You've seen Umbrella Academy. You've read it. I would have Gerard Way on my team. He knows what's good. And who's my last one? Who's a celebrity? Or I guess I should pick someone from history now that I've done two celebrities. Who do I fuck with? Okay, now I'm thinking of which fucking stupid which critical theorist would I want to bring along that that would just transcribe all of our events. Right. And you know what?
What critical lens do you want on your
I'm thinking
actions.
About this really hard. I'm thinking about this really hard. I think mine is gonna have to be Hannah Arendt. I'd bring her along.
Okay.
She would have some things to say about the shit that was going on. And I think she would lead me in good direction. I think she would give me positive guidance.
Great.
So those are my three. It's extremely me set up right there. Kato, have you thought of yours? Or Rob, do you have yours?
I think I got mine.
Okay.
First, just because I've had her on the mind a lot lately. I think I would want Jane Austen on my squad.
All right.
I just, because journeys are long. There's a lot of talking in a JRPG.
Yeah.
I think we need Jane Austen in there. Obviously, a lot of planning, a lot of overcoming difficulties. You got a really long campaign to deal with here. So there's no way I would do this without Louis Alexandre Berthier. Absolutely not.
Of course.
Sure. Obvious choice. Don't even need to explain it.
Yeah. And then, so I was sort of torn between two Tonys.
Okay.
I would definitely love to hang with Anthony Bourdain.
Right.
Uh-huh.
100% rest in peace. Absolutely one of my favorite writers. And I do love good cooking, so that's a lot of bases covered.
Yeah.
But, and hear me out on this. Tony Romo.
Okay.
Just a guy, like, just enthusiastic,
yeah.
fun-loving guy. He's happy to be here.
Yeah.
Just upbeat. I think you need that on your team. Mm-hmm. I think you need somebody, even when things are bad,
uh-huh.
who can just be like, yeah, look, I'm not going to bullshit you.
Yeah.
This is bad. But it's kind of funny, too, right? And it is kind of funny, Tony.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I love that. I love that.
So, Rob, I have to ask, did you beat Saints Row 4?
No.
Okay. I was wondering if there was a special aspect of your Jane Austen pick. Did you know she was a gamer?
Excuse me?
Play Saints
Did I miss something really key Saints in Row Saints 4. Row 4?
Play Saints Row 4.
Is Saints Row 4
yes,
the latest Jane Austen adaptation that we don't know
she
about?
She really is actually in that game. Spoilers for a game from 7 years ago.
I decided I want to switch out Hannah Arendt for Virginia Woolf.
Okay. Nice.
Mm. Last minute swap.
Okay.
But I don't want to be depressed, so I decided Virginia Woolf, also kind of depressing, but at least would be creative about it. Not to say Hannah Arendt is creative, but I don't want to be in reality, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just... I think you gotta have a Berthier or a Berthier figure in mm-hmm. there, because like Napoleon gets all the attention, but Berthier was like his head of staff, his mm-hmm. chief of staff,
mm-hmm.
and like really, that was kind of the key figure for a lot of that stuff.
Right.
Like just one guy in his head kept all these plans of campaign for like conquering Europe in an age like before any industrial technology.
Okay,
so I'm saying like inventory management.
I see you. Yeah. I hear you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see your fucking Fire Emblem campaigns right now. Kato, please.
I'm really bad at this, but...
I mean, you started with Jada Pinkett Smith, so...
No, that's going back on that. And actually, I was thinking of Jaden, actually.
Oh, Jaden Smith.
Oh, yeah, like, okay.
He's my mage.
Okay.
I think our, like chronicler would be... I would... pick Francisco Goya.
Oh, nice.
Okay, yeah.
Love me some good etchings of real life events. So
hell yeah.
That'll be great. I need someone that's good at hitting people.
Yeah.
That's the rough one. That's the one that is like, there's so many good fighters in the world.
Yeah, there are.
Very bad at picking one. Jackie Chan. There we go.
Hell yeah.
Celebrity, actor, but also can probably still kick someone's ass.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Entertaining, but also useful in a fight.
Fuck yeah. That's really good. that's extremely good. We have a part two, which,
oh, yes.
not to throw you all under a loop again,
oh,
but
shit.
Now, which three fictional characters do you want in your real life mini golf putt-putt party? My picks, says Mo, are Rookie Greentail from Pyre, General Iroh from Avatar The Last Airbender, and Dominic
one.
Toretto.
All right.
So you have a team that you're going to play putt-putt with?
Yes.
Yeah, but you're all against
spend time
you're all
them.
Against each other. You're just like, well.
Oh, okay, okay.
You know.
This is just to go play
this is like go
them.
Play
I thought it was
golf.
Like a competitive team where like you're trying to pick the best putt-putters.
This is your putt-putt league?
Yeah.
No. So... Do you have yours?
I would like Dr. Joan Watson, Lucy Liu's take on
oh,
Watson
hell yeah.
from
yeah,
elementary.
Because yeah, yeah.
she's so precise. Like,
yeah.
she could fucking nail it every
Wait,
time.
Wait, but you're playing against them.
That's fine. I okay. want a challenge.
Yeah. Challenge. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I want a challenge.
Okay, go ahead.
I want Aaron's son from Farscape, just because I want to spend time with her.
Mm-hmm.
She's like my favorite character
nice.
Ever of all time. One of my favorite characters of all time ever
yeah.
in the universe. It's my favorite show. It's fun. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, anybody. and also, I would like to hang out with the Little Mermaid.
That
I think
sounds...
that Ariel from the Little Mermaid has a lot of heart.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a lot of spunk.
Yeah.
She's got a lot of courage.
Mm-hmm.
It might be hard for her to play this game. She might require some sort of like floating device.
Tank.
A tank. But I would like
she
to see that.
She gets legs at the end of the movie, right? This is post-movie
she
or
does.
Pre-movie?
I like to think that she can
Look,
shapeshift and not just be part of a patriarchal society.
She does come back in two.
Yeah.
Right?
I didn't
None
want...
of those are real.
Agreed. I agree, Rob. I agree.
I just... Look. There's These are people I want to hang out with.
I believe in you.
And play a game with.
Yeah.
Like, Joan Watson is, like, a challenger, for sure. And, like, the other two are, like, really cool people that I admire and have admired throughout my life. Mm-hmm. I was five when I first saw The Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm. And, like, I've always thought Ariel was pretty cool.
The course will be outfitted to fit your company's needs. So.
All right, cool. I like
No
that.
Need to worry.
I like that. Nice. All right.
Kato or Rob?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have diverse interests.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know, I like characters and people from all walks of life. So mine would obviously be Neil McCauley from Heat.
Good.
Tom Cruise's Vincent from Collateral.
Excellent. Excellent.
And Wes Studi's Magua. From Last of the Mohicans. I think that's my ideal putt-putt party.
Nice.
I love this.
Sounds like a grand time. Kato?
I've got like two, or I had two. I lost one. First off is Kirby.
Okay.
Because fucking...
Dreamland right there.
Kirby's Dream Course.
Yeah.
Great golf game. I think it would be fun to see what he can do.
Agreed.
On a fucking putt-putt course.
Agreed.
Fuck, shit. I just had another one that I lost. My brain... God damn it.
If you don't remember, we can always come back.
Yeah,
your
come back to me.
Your brain could be a character.
Come back to me if you've got yours.
Let's see. Okay, three fictional characters, mini golf. Mine would be, who are like, yeah, whose minds do I want to pick? You know who I have some questions for? Elizabeth Bennet.
Yes!
I have some fucking questions for Lizzie.
Yes, Lizzie.
So Lizzie's on the team. I would also bring... let me think. I would bring... Bloodhound from Apex Legends.
Nice. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they would definitely...
Nice.
I would love to spend some time with them.
Bird included?
Yes. I would like them to tell me what it's like... to be in the huntsman or like the hunt mode when they go into like the prey. Like, what is that like? Tell me about it. But don't do it while we're playing mini golf because it might give you an unfair advantage. And then like imagine Bloodhound just being able to like see all the obstacles like while we're still at the windmill.
Right.
And just like fucking
ding, 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 ding.
Yep. Okay. Now let me think of one more. I want someone like, well, I guess Lizzie's pretty funny, but who's like, who would be just a jaunt to have with us? Huh?
Can I sub out Helena Bonham Carter for Natasha Lyonne?
Yes, you absolutely can.
Just let the record show. Please.
I accept this change.
Cool.
Do you remember your third one? Okay, fuck. Okay, I'll go fast. I'll just think of someone. SpongeBob would get annoying after a while.
Yeah. He, like, would be a fan of Putt-Putt, though.
Would absolutely be, and be very enthusiastic, yeah. And be very much a team player, but I just, you know, it's like the friend that...
King Lear.
Yeah!
Okay, I will take your suggestion. Put King Lear on the team.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. We'll see if we all come out alive.
Okay.
Did you think of a last
two
one?
Two more.
Or two more.
Oh, my goodness. Two?
Yeah. Two? I only said one.
I've been filming for like an hour.
Another Kirby. Three
Kirby.
Three Kirby. A team of three Kirby.
Three Kirby.
Amazing. I love it. All right. I think that's going to do it for us.
I think Kirby would cheat.
Kirby would just eat the ball and spit it out. That's how Kirby putts.
Yeah.
And then become the ball.
Is that right?
Yeah. No, well, Kirby becomes the ball.
Well, not if,
see, I don't know.
Not
like
if Kirby,
Kirby is such a creature
it.
Of mischief and chaos.
That's why like, I think it would be
gonna,
fun.
All right, right? Put
you're
fucking,
not a good game
you know
with
what?
Kirby.
I want to put fucking Grookey on my team.
Whoa.
Whoa, so King, yep. King Lear out.
King Lear replaced
actually,
by Grookey.
I would want to put Sobble on my team. Instead of King Lear.
Ugh.
And just spend some spend some time. Like, just a good, no stress. It's okay. take a couple practice swings. Everything's fine. Everything's good.
We're just hanging out.
We're just hanging out. Yeah. Sobble.
Yeah.
That's my third member.
Oh, fuck. I did have a second one. I remember my second one. It was Alphonse from Full Metal Alchemist.
Good.
They're nice.
I was going to say Naruto.
Fucking Christ.
Good. Thanks.
Good.
Oh, third one is Mob from Mob Psycho 100.
Hell yeah.
It's a very good anime and everyone should watch, and Mob seems like a very nice boy.
I've actually seen some of that one.
100%. I want to swap out Sobble now for Mob.
Good.
And copy it.
Great.
Good call.
You can send your questions.
Get the fuck out of here, Sobble.
Fuck!
I'll come pick you up after the game.
Oh my god.
You can send all of your fun questions that truly stump us without any reason why they should to gaming@symbolvice.com with the subject question. You can find us on Twitter at Waypoint, on Facebook at Waypoint Vice, on YouTube at Waypoint Vice, and on SoundCloud at Waypoint Vice, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Is that the one you wanted to shout out?
No.
Are you looking for something else?
I was looking for what's the last one? I don't know what.
Wait, we're on SoundCloud?
Yeah, we're on SoundCloud.
We are on SoundCloud.
Wild.
We are. Yo, check out my SoundCloud, fam. It's got nothing on it. Absolutely.
Isn't there one thing on there?
I think there might be like one.
Wasn't there one
podcast
file?
Or something? I don't know.
One single file.
I'm looking this
to
up.
Rule them
keep,
all.
Keep talking.
Danielle, where can people find you on the internet?
Find me at Danielle R.I., along with my cool crew of Shirley Manson, Natasha Leone, and Amanda Nunes.
Hell yeah.
Our Save Point interview with the Flores Project Development and Research Director Amelia Luxardo is on
okay.
our
on SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.
That
all
is
right.
very interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that's there, but it is.
I don't know why either. But go listen to that. If you so desire. Also follow us. We only have 33 followers. Let's get that up.
Yeah,
I don't know. My new goal is 50.
Hell yeah.
Hit it up.
Let's do it.
Instagram?
You said our Instagram?
On the gram.
I did not say our Instagram. Although Kato has been putting transcriptions and stuff on our Instagram. So our Instagram is Instagram.com. Or no, who goes to fucking Instagram.com? But
I mean,
Instagram.
I'm literally doing it right now.
I know. At Waypoint Vice. There's stuff on there if you want to see it. There's Austin wearing a fucking power armor helmet. Jesus. Rob, please save me. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, doing what I do best, taking down putt-putt. at Rob Zachney.
Kato, where can people find you on the internet?
At @A_Kato_appears.
You know what I decided is that I would like to trade out everyone that I said I would like to go to putt-putt with and use my fictional characters in my mind that are right in front of me, aka you three.
Aww.
And go, we should all go play putt-putt together.
Play
That'd
putt-putt.
Be fun. Yeah.
Is there any putt-putt in Boston?
You don't think we're real?
Absolutely not. This could not be real. I'm not fucking real. I'm not even here right now. I'm fucking somewhere else. I've already...
So wait, do you just out yourself as like simulation theory? Like,
no, I truly cannot believe in that.
Oh my god.
Although sometimes... No,
sometimes.
I truly can't.
You know, John Locke says...
Let's go play golf.
Yeah, sometimes I think about...
Sobble.
Sometimes I think I'm Sobble. Now that I've been introduced, this is me. I really got away from me there. Okay. Shout out to Bowen. That bit really got away from me. Oh, you can find me, I guess, on fucking Twitter at Natalie Watson. Thanks to Bowen. Shout outs for lending us the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. You can find out more about Bowen at waypoint.zone/BOEN. What did I do wrong?
No, you're good. That's good.
Cotter just gave me a look like it did something wrong. I was like, what did I do wrong?
I thought we were missing something, but
we're missing a lot of things today, Cotter. We're just gonna roll with it.
Shout outs to our forums, Discord. Fuck.
Discourse.zone.
Discourse.zone. Check them out if you have thoughts about whatever. you want to think about.
Come hang out. It's a good
Discord
spot.
Fuck is going to be the second track on our SoundCloud.
Discord fuck. Discord fuck.
Shout outs to our Discord. It's good.
Yeah. Oh, shout outs to our other feed that people should go subscribe to. Oh, yeah.
Shout outs to fucking work that we do, aka Be Good and Rewatch It, in which Rob is guiding Danielle and I through a truly incredible emotional journey of BBC's very own.
This week it's Clueless.
This week is Clueless. Right?
BBC's very own
Clueless. By Jane Austen.
Next week, though.
Next week.
After
okay.
you've listened
so
to
So you've
this.
Already listened to Clueless, yeah, presumably. Obviously. Because obviously you consume all of our content because we're the best, right?
Yeah.
I think so. Five Leave stars. Us a five-star review. Shout-outs. So go to your podcast app and search Be Good and Rewatch It and listen to our Clueless episode where we get into all of the nitty-gritty details and give Clueless that famous, iconic 90s movie, 95 actually, a rewatch. And stay tuned for next week in which we begin our journey, our emotional journey that Rob leads Danielle and I through, of BBC's very own Pride and Prejudice with Colin Firth and Jennifer
L.
Okay, I wasn't sure about the first name. I got the last name though. Which is truly just an incredible watch. So begin watching that if you haven't or why would you have
read it? Be good and rewatch it.
Be good and fucking rewatch it. Danielle, what can you please free me from this hellscape?
I would love to, Natalie. Everyone out there, be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Netherfield is Let It Last.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
I honestly feel like I'm in some fucking Rosings hellscape right now.
Talk about that staircase again.
Talk about that fireplace six more times, please, Mr. Collins. Bye.
Outros are the worst, aren't they?
I'm so... Yeah. That was a mess.
No, it was
I
good,
though. I think I'm just tired.
They're good when they're messy, yeah. But they are, like, they're so cumbersome.
Yeah.
They're just, like, so a very awkward handles. Mouthful. Yeah, it's like blah 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 blah.
That's where I keep them.
Let me just hide this Jordan Woods Jada Pinkett Smith interview for a second.
Oh yeah, what's up there?
Oh my God,
never mind. I don't need to know.
I need.
We should talk about.
So
this
I can't talk
on the
about.
Podcast.
I don't want.
No, okay.
I don't think anyone would really care.
This is my waypoint for the week.
This is like
you guys.
My waypoint for the week is defending Jordan Woods against the fucking Kardashian Empire. I will die on this hill. I don't care. Anyway, good. If you want my thoughts, I'll give them to you later. They're, you know, but also I'm here for some Pisces trash talk because my ex is a Pisces. So I was here for it. I was
I'm
like,
on the cusp.
Oh,
cusp Pisces, almost Pisces.
Yeah.
It's too bad Leos are known for being perfect.
Rob, you're such a Leo.